ESPN Daily is presented by Supercuts, the smarter, easier way to get a haircut. It's not just any haircut. It's Supercuts.
Had 4 turnovers today, 4 interceptions in one game. That's ridiculous. Well, I got to step it up. But hats off to my defense, though, because they played lights out. Like no tomorrow, and that's what we needed, and they came through.
That is Ravens quarterback Lamar Jackson deciding not to scramble away from the obvious truth here. Baltimore's win over the Browns was ugly. But even as the Patriots keep stacking up wins and the Packers sparkle over the Rams, the mood of Week 12 is not beauty, but desperation. And our Monday morning quarterback, Alex Smith, is here to tell us what looks real and what's just in the eye of the beholder. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Monday, November 29th. This is ESPN Daily. All right, cool. 3, 2, 1. So, Alex Smith, it is 12:10 a.m. Eastern, and I'm just curious, man. Like, for me, what we just saw in this Ravens-Browns game, it began to take on, like, a Nicolas Cage quality for me. Like, it was so bad, it became good. But I'm curious, as one of the most accurate quarterbacks in recent NFL history, if you could even begin to empathize with my feelings about this game, or if this was just gross for you.
It was bad ball. It was bad ball, Pablo, tonight. You know, in a day then when there was a lot of good things to watch, especially on offense and quarterback play, and that was not it tonight. God, the one point, I think there were 3 turnovers in a 6-play span, like right before halftime. And it was like they were all bad. Like
you're legitimately disgusted.
It was sloppy. With all that being said, Baltimore found a way to win. And that's who, I mean, I was expecting them to be able to pull it out. And despite Lamar throwing 4 picks, I thought he definitely looked rusty from the week off. Just from timing, there were like a lot of, I think, uncharacteristic things we saw from him. They still just found a way to win. And I thought that was important. Their defense played solid. They held the Browns are the number one rushing team in football, and they held them to like 40 yards rushing. So they're really, really dominant. I never felt like the game got out of reach for them, despite how bad, you know, the turnovers were. So I think that, I mean, that was a positive, but it was not a pretty game aesthetically. And the Browns, man, I keep thinking they're going to turn a corner, and they just it's not happening.
No, I mean, if you can't turn a corner upon which Lamar Jackson has just thrown about as many interceptions as he used to throw in like a season almost. Like if you can't capitalize on that, you're only down 3 for the vast majority of this thing. Ended up being a 6-point game, but they were down 3 after he had thrown 4 picks. Like, this felt like the specific game that Baker Mayfield's Browns had to have. And instead, this feels like a real low point among many low points for Cleveland Browns fans.
I you know what? I couldn't agree more. Honestly, I feel like Baltimore, like I said, I thought Lamar looked really rusty from the week off, but their defense still looked good. They're great on special teams. Like, Lamar obviously showed flashes of what he can do on any given point. I mean, he is so remarkable.
It's like trying to tackle a ghost sometimes. Yeah. And we saw, like, you know, the varying reactions to this, right? We saw Myles Garrett go and shake his hand literally after one play. And then you saw
Clowney slamming his helmet.
Jadeveon Clowney slamming his helmet, just like running the gamut of emotional reactions to that.
I mean, I don't think we've ever seen the likes of Lamar. Some of those plays, like even with that said, like his touchdown pass, he had just thrown 3 interceptions.
Yes.
I mean, then the touchdown pass was absolutely phenomenal.
No, I mean, just describe that throw, though, Alex, because he's running backwards and horizontally, and he flings this up, and just the mechanics, right? Like, you know good quarterback mechanics. Like, what was this like for you to watch?
You know, he on that specific play, he has a free rusher off his edge who he eludes, and then he's running around. He, like, cuts back across the field, and by the time he's throwing, he's got 3 guys bearing down on him. One of them is Myles Garrett, who actually hits his arm when he throws this thing back into the end zone. Like, the number one quarterback rule is don't throw the ball late down the middle. Like, that's like usually like one of the first things you hear. Like, nothing good happens when you throw it late down the middle. And Lamar heaves this thing, you know, after running around for a while, reversing field, and obviously finds his tight end, Mark Andrews, in the end zone. But just an absolutely phenomenal play.
Whole bunch of Browns coming after. Jackson trying to keep it alive. Put it up for grabs. And it's a touchdown! Andrews! Wow!
The rules don't apply to Lamar. Okay, the same rules that apply to most you know, mortal quarterbacks don't apply to him. He is something special. And yeah, like I said, I think all that considered, I think he's going to be fine. He's going to get back on track and they're going to roll. But if there's a game that Cleveland should have won, it should have been this. And I'm not sure their only touchdown even was a touchdown.
Well, that's the other thing, man. We saw some of the wildest catches that you'll see in this sport happened in this game. And I don't know if any of them were actually catches. We had the Mark Andrews one downfield that was wiped away because it was a penalty. That wasn't technically a catch. Then the one you're talking about was the touchdown to David Njoku, which was not a catch, but counted as one. And then there was another one that was like, oh, it was Lamar's fourth pick that was picked off by John Johnson III, which was bouncing off of Mark Andrews' body into his, which wasn't a catch, it was a pick. But it was just chaos, man. The whole time, it was just chaos.
It was crazy. Mark Andrews' one-handed catch while getting PI'd was the catch of the day, without a doubt. I mean, it was ridiculous.
Maybe the year.
Yeah,
maybe
it was
the year.
Absolutely ridiculous. I'm not sure what a catch is and isn't at this point. I mean, I just finished 16 years in the NFL, and when these things go to review and these refs slow these things down somehow and they can talk themselves in to anything. Yeah, but again, serious answers for Cleveland. I thought this was a game, given all that, they should have had. And still, it wasn't that close.
No.
Even as close as the score was, they never really had a chance.
No, emotionally, spiritually, this was a defeated team, despite being a team that was actively playing in a football game that was winnable. I mean, look, this brings us to this question about this division, right? Because every team entered this week in the AFC North above 500. And now you have the Ravens at 8-3, the Bengals at 7-4. We'll get to them later. The Steelers 5-5-1. We'll get to them later. The Browns at 6-6 at the very bottom of this thing. And I know anything is possible in the AFC, a recurring theme. It just feels like it's not Cleveland's year, man. It just feels like this is trending in the wrong direction.
I agree, but that seventh seed in the AFC, I'm not sure who wants it and who's going to get it. It's changed every single week.
No, you're right. I mean, everyone's alive right now, technically.
You know, and the Browns have been beat up. If they can get back healthy, I hope so. I think they're great for football, back rolling when they're playing well. But they didn't look the part tonight at all. And in a division that is loaded. But yeah, clearly, I think at this point, both Baltimore and Cincinnati look much better and more deserving.
All right, Alex, after the break, we're going to get to the good football. You're wearing a very disgusted, dissatisfied look on your face. In a couple of seconds, we're going to get to the stuff that'll make you happy.
All right, can't wait.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured, it was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo, another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely. Drink wisely.
All right, Alex. So the game of the day heading into this was going to be Rams at Packers. And what we saw in Green Bay, I mean, I was expecting to see the Rams like use this bye week they just had to fix whatever the 49ers had broken in them on Monday night. But it seems like what happened was actually the Niners exposed something that Green Bay was able to totally exploit here. What did you see out of this game in terms of the weaknesses that the Packers got to take advantage of?
Yeah, I mean, I think first off, the Rams are absolutely reeling right now. You said it, they had a bye week to try to get themselves together, get Odell caught up in the offense. They didn't do anything to help themselves today.
No.
Three times they gave the Packers the ball inside their own 30. Rashawn Gary with a sack fumble on Stafford led to points. They turned around and went for it on their own 29 and got stuffed. Later on, they fumbled a punt inside their own 30, and then Stafford throws a pick six. So you can't overcome that. I mean, I don't care how talented you are and how many playmakers you have. You're going into Lambeau. It's late in the year. It was a huge game. As many problems as the Rams had, I thought Green Bay equally looked impressive. Aaron Rodgers, despite his fractured toe or COVID toe or whatever he's got, no ill effect. I mean, I thought he played unbelievable today. He was spinning it all over the field. And then, I mean, the first score of the game on the rushing touchdown, he gets Jalen Ramsey in the open field. And, I mean, that wasn't even close there. So I thought he looked really, really impressive. And then another great player, you know, obviously Aaron Jones was back, but still, you know, kind of coming back off his injury. A.J. Dillon, you know, the big back that we've heard so much about from Boston College, who's kind of been just sitting in the wings. Man, he looked ready to go today. Man, Green Bay continues to find ways to win ball games. Their defense has flown under the radar all year. They're a dynamic group, and on the opposite side of the ball, the Rams are searching. They are in a bit of a free fall and got to get it together.
Yeah, so in terms of like what teams have figured out about Stafford and what you see as a quarterback when you watch him now, I mean, it's worth noting, right? Against the Titans, a loss, he throws a pick six. Against the Niners, a loss, he throws a pick six. And now against the Packers, as you just said, they pick six him again. And no one's had more interceptions returned for touchdowns in the NFL this year than that dude. And I'm curious what that looks like to you as a guy who used to do this job.
Matthew looks, you know, he looked uncomfortable all day today. I think they were like 4 of 13 on third down. Not very good. They were 0 for on fourth. And it started early, like I said, with that Rashawn Gary sack fumble. And that was the same thing we said last week. And it was the same thing when they got pounded by the Titans. They haven't been able to protect. And this was a Rams offense that for years we have seen them establish the run and then play action off it, bootleg off of it, you know, get themselves into third and shorts and convert on a lot of these little option routes to Cooper Kupp underneath. And they've gone away from that. So they rely heavily on the dropback pass. And then if your offensive line can't protect consistently, it's going to be a tough day. And you're going to get these pick sixes. Like you said, three weeks in a row, he's throwing pick sixes. It just forces bad judgment, creates problems. And Green Bay did it today.
So the next phase of the cycle, I think, is that we discover how hurt Matthew Stafford might be. Because Danny Rossini, our colleague, said today that he's been dealing with pain in his throwing arm, his elbow, a sore ankle, chronic back pain. But the pick sixes in particular, Alex, I just want to talk about what a particular nightmare that is for a quarterback. I mean, take me into what that does, how that feels. I just want to jump into your brain as somebody who I haven't looked this up. You must have done this a couple times in your life.
Unfortunately, I've tried to delete them. But there's nothing worse. I mean, listen, as a quarterback, you have the ball in your hands every play. And there's a lot of people like that. We understand, obviously, that turnovers are so costly, but you still got to go out there and put up points. And so there's a huge responsibility. And not only are the 10 guys in the huddle, the 53 guys on the sideline, all the coaches, all their families, the entire organization is riding on you making good decisions and being good with the football. And so obviously it's high stakes, but you still got to be able to go out there and cut it loose. And to throw a pick six, especially when it's your fault, and as terrible a feeling it is, you have to go right back out there is the reality.
I was going
to say, right? You got to go right back out there. And typically you're losing. So you're going to throw you're going right back out there to throw the ball. And that's part of it. You got to get over it. That is so much. That's so easy to say here on this podcast.
That's right.
You know, sitting in my, you know, air conditioned room. But like when you're out there in the heat of the moment, in a, you know, stadium packed, it's hard. It's really hard. But I do go back to, like, that's what pressure does. I mean, especially when you can get it with a four-man rush. When a defense doesn't have to blitz you, send linebackers or secondary, and they can get home with their front four, it just speeds up your decision-making. It forces you to throw things early when things maybe aren't quite open, and all it takes is one little miscommunication. You know, oh, I thought a receiver was going to cut in front. He doesn't. All of a sudden, you're hitting a DB in his chest, and he's in your end zone. So it can happen that fast, and I think that's where we see the Rams are. They're obviously really talented and can drop back and throw, but this isn't 7-on-7. You've got to be able to protect, and they haven't been able to do that these last few weeks. And again, we'll see if they can get it figured out.
Yeah. So let's spin around to another battle in the trenches, Alex, because in Indianapolis, the Buccaneers and the Colts, this was a fun one, man. Back and forth, Leonard Fournette giving the Bucs a 38-31 lead with 20 seconds left. And then just when everything seems like it's done and over, you know, Isaiah Rodgers returns that kickoff to the Tampa Bay 32.
And they're going to run this one on out with Rodgers on the left side. Rodgers, look at this! One man to beat! Isaiah Rodgers, can he get there? Oh my goodness!
Carson Wentz, he has the opportunity to make this thing a real game, a Hail Mary opportunity. And what were you thinking as he's loading up to try and bomb one into the end zone?
Well, they had a chance. I mean, I loved this game. This felt like a playoff game, two playoff caliber teams going at it, and it came right down to the wire. Even when, like you said, when Leonard Fournette scored, I thought the game was over with 21 seconds or whatever was left. And then all of a sudden, the Colts take that kickoff and almost score and then have a chance, obviously, for a Hail Mary. And the Colts are big outside. You know, they have Michael Pittman Jr., who's shown it all year, going up and making big catches. And crazier things have happened. So it was amazing right down to the wire. But obviously, the Bucs prevailed and found a way, a big, big win. And on a day when they didn't quite have it going in the passing game, Tom Brady and these big receivers didn't really get anything going, and they kind of had to rely on the run game. And I thought this was really impressive by them. Leonard Fournette, you forget how talented he is. He went off today for 100 yards. He also, I think, had 7 catches and a touchdown. Tom did love having Gronk back. He had another big day as well. He was kind of the lone bright spot. As far as on the receiving end.
Yep.
But there were two crucial plays, I thought, that turned the tide. The Colts really had kind of were up on the Bucs, and I thought kind of pulling away in the third quarter. And then a couple key drives. The Colts were driving, and just like we talked about, went up to throw a jump ball. Like we've seen all season, Wentz put up a ball to Pittman Jr. one-on-one, and Antoine Winfield out-jumped him for the pick.
Wentz rolling out. Setting up to go deep, going to float one deep down the field for Pittman. It is intercepted by Winfield. Over the back comes Winfield with room to run.
And it was a huge play. The Colts were driving and looking to score. And Antoine Winfield, I thought, was a huge play in that game. Huge, huge momentum shift. The Bucs march down and score. And then on the very next possession, the Colts get it back and muff a punt.
Good high punt. And Hines lost the when you think the momentum will stop. Scotty Miller picks it up.
Right there in the third quarter, those couple big plays swung momentum, and the Bucs were able to pull out with the lead. But it definitely delivered. Carson, I thought, played really, really well today. I know he has the two interceptions that show up. One was on the Hail Mary, but he looked under control. They had a bunch of fourth down conversions.
Now, you've been telling me, Alex, you've been telling me all season, don't give up on Carson Wentz. And this was one of those days where I think, like, yeah, okay, maybe Alex Smith had a point. Yeah.
He looked good. He had the two of his touchdown passes early were ridiculous. The bomb he threw on the post. There's not many guys in the NFL making that throw. And then they had a great little wrinkle on a play-action boot.
They're going to roll out Wentz. Looking in to rolling. Call for the touchdown, T.Y. Hilton.
He's looking really comfortable back there. I still think the Colts are a problem in the AFC. But hats off to the Bucs for finding a way to win.
One of the things that the Colts try to figure out here, Alex, speaking to like how do you solve the dilemma that is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, is like, what do you do when your best player, this MVP candidate, is Jonathan Taylor, a running back, and you have this loaded box that Tampa Bay has where like their run defense is better than anyone's, basically. And so there was a stretch, I believe, in like the third quarter where like Carson dropped back 26 times in a row. Jonathan Taylor didn't get the ball once in that stretch. That question of like, do you play to your strength or do you go away from your opponents? Did that approach add up to you? How did you see that particular aspect of this conflict?
It's a great question, Pablo. And I think the answer is kind of, it's got to be a little bit of both. They have been pounding the football, the Colts have. And Jonathan Taylor obviously is playing at a ridiculous level right now. But the Bucks front is the real deal. I mean, the Bucks front is good, and they were loading the box all day. They were daring the Colts to throw the football, and it worked for the most part early. But yeah, then you like you said, you get in the fourth quarter and you realize, well, God, our best player maybe hasn't touched the football a whole lot. and I think you can, in some ways, you out-scheme yourself. The Colts had 5 turnovers today and still almost beat the Super Bowl champs. So, I mean,
yep.
I thought this was it was a ton of fun to watch. They were making plays back and forth. I do think both these teams, I mean, obviously the Bucks are rolling, but I think the Colts are still a playoff caliber team and kind of look for them to kind of, I think, continue on. I don't think this will slow them up too much.
Well, look, they're in the AFC, man. And the next game we'll talk about is one of those games you're like, well, all right. So what do we make of the AFC after we watch the Patriots sort of like take care of the Titans? But I just want to be clear for the listener who maybe didn't watch this thing. The score will indicate that this was not particularly close, right? This was a 36-13 win for Bill Belichick over Mike Vrabel, his former player and protege. But this was a game, Alex, that the Titans, despite missing Derrick Henry and Julio Jones and A.J. Brown, they were in this, and a lot of the reason why they were no longer in it by the end was self-inflicted wounds, right? What did this feel like to you?
Oh, you said it. Yeah, I agree. This was a much better game than the score indicated. It kind of obviously pulled away late in the fourth and got a little lopsided, but for most of the game was back and forth. You know, we posed the question last week, like, who are the Titans on offense? Can they run the football? They still hadn't seemed to answer the question without Derrick Henry. Can they do it? Well, today they ran for 270 yards against a really good defense. The problem was they had 3 fumbles to go with it. That really, really costed them. You add on Tannehill throwing 1 interception, and they had 4 turnovers. And did beat themselves. That was kind of the name of the game. And that's something that, I mean, dare I say, I think the Patriots may be the most consistent football team in the AFC. For that exact reason, they don't beat themselves.
Yeah,
they're so well coached that they don't hand these games over to opponents. And the Titans played tough today. They were well coached. But yeah, you can't overcome that. 3 fumbles in the running game. Tannehill added an interception.
And those special teams mistakes, Alex, there were penalties on the opening kickoff, on the first punt that they had on that first drive, a missed point after, a missed field goal. I mean, all of it was, just like, you know, Bill Belichick never likes to leave his opponents a margin of error. And in this one, it was disastrous in terms of just stepping on a series of rakes.
Yeah. And there were a couple, I thought, great things to watch. I mean, the Titans have one of the best defensive fronts too in football. And I thought it was an amazing, I mean, the Patriots have really been running the football well the last few weeks. But you saw them kind of adjust. They hit 100 yards barely by the end of the game, but for the most part, they were throwing the football, and Mac Jones had to carry a little more of the load, and he did. Threw for over 300 yards and 2 touchdowns.
Yeah,
played really, really well.
310 yards through the air. Yeah,
he is now 2nd in the NFL in completion percentage. 2nd. I mean, he has continued to play really, really well. And a guy I think we have to say his name. I'm not sure we have all year, even though he's made plays all year. Is J.C. Jackson? I mean, the guy. Has been a turnover machine. On Dante Foreman broke off a really long run, and J.C. Jackson came from the side and the whole peanut punch and knocked it out.
Yep.
And then later had a pick in the end zone. He has now 7 interceptions on the year. This Patriots defense has a ton of takeaways, and they did it again today. And so I think you have to say they might be the most consistent team. We have talked about all these Jekyll and Hyde teams, and the Patriots these last 6-7 weeks have played really, really good football week in and week out.
Yeah, this is the 4th straight week where the Patriots have shut out their opponent in the second half. In the entire second half, fewest points allowed per game. And so I just want to give you this statistic because as someone who played in the league for a very long time, and maybe you'll appreciate this tour of Bill Belichick's career, because the Patriots are now on a 6-game winning streak. He has done that in the following seasons: 2001, 2003, 2004, 2007, 2010, 2011, 2012, 2014, 2015, 2016, 2017, 2018, 2019, and wait for it, 2020. So, you know, that's the league we have all been living in, and we may remain there for the end of time.
Yeah, we may. They got a young quarterback now. Who knows how long Bill will be going for. But again, yeah, the Titans today, too. I kind of felt bad for Ryan Tannehill. I mean, he was really missing A.J. Brown and Julio. I mean, I don't even know who some of these people were he was throwing to out there.
Same.
It was ugly. And when you think about, you know, the Titans on offense, especially heading into the season, I mean, it was like, man, AJ Brown, Julio Jones, Derrick Henry. I mean, those are three big names that weren't on the field today. It showed, but hats off. I do think the Titans still, regardless, played tough. Hopefully they can kind of get back healthy, get a couple of those receivers back, obviously.
And again, it's the AFC. They are still in this thing.
Yeah, that's right.
They are not dead yet. So Alex Smith, after the break, let's get into what you saw in Pittsburgh, where they may not be so lucky in terms of remaining in that playoff picture, as well as what went on with the Niners and with your old coach over in Michigan, Jim Harbaugh.
Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot. Taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
So, Alex, you wanted to talk to me about this Bengals-Steelers game, and you wanted to talk to me about it because you noticed something that made you think that, wait a minute, Pittsburgh, like, something's going on there, and it's not great news for a team that's used to stability.
Yeah, it was weird for me to watch today because, you know, going back to even my rookie year and then my entire career, and even before that, like, the Steelers have been one of the most physically dominating football teams in, like, maybe in the history of football. Like, they are
tough. It's their culture,
yeah,
right? It's their culture.
They are tough, especially on the defensive side. I mean, these defensive linemen, how many outside linebackers and heavy-handed, and they beat up on football teams. Like, they literally beat up. And how many times have we watched them beat up on the Bengals? I mean, I feel like I've seen it you know, I've watched that. I've seen that play.
The NFL food chain. The Steelers destroy the Bengals. That's how it works in the ecosystem of football.
Yes. And it's just, that's the way, you know, that's what we're all accustomed to. And today, to watch that script get flipped and the Bengals absolutely beat up the Steelers.
Burrow, Nixon, there he goes. In for 6. And the Bengals increase their lead to 23.
I know the Steelers have had ups and downs these last couple of years and they've been aging and, you know, do they still have the gas in the tank? And today was the first time it really hit me that I don't think they do. You know, I'm not sure they do. And I think, you know, potentially a little bit of an end of an era and changes are going to be coming. And with that, hats off to the Bengals, the way they played. Joe Mixon was a beast today.
Hand off and it goes to Mixon. Oh, he's making a miss. What a great move. He got by Pierre, and now he's off to the races and shoved out of bounds by Edmonds. Pierre thought he had him right in his sights.
What a day he's having.
This is a 41-10 destruction, and usually you'd think, okay, well, then Joe Burrow, right, the star quarterback, it must have been him. No, it was that dude, Joe Mixon, out of the backfield.
Yeah, the Steelers gave up 200 yards of rushing today, and I don't know how many of – I mean, a ton of them were after contact. I've never seen that watching the Steelers defense. It was strange to see. Hats off to the Bengals for the game plan and coming ready to play and playing physical. And then, you know, watching the end of halves, the Ben throwing the pick six that really kind of blew this game wide open. It was tough. It was tough to watch. And it was just kind of my thoughts, but.
No, look, you're right. But it just feels like the Ben Roethlisberger experiment in terms of can we squeeze anything more out of this dude's body? It feels like the answer to that is, at this point, just no, we can't.
It's hard. I mean, he's a first ballot Hall of Famer.
To be sure, yes.
But I think the combination of certainly the way their defense is playing and, yeah, an offense like that, it's just not working out. And it'd be one thing if they had the Steelers defense of old that was absolutely shutting people down and creating all these takeaways and causing problems like we've seen them do over the years. But they don't have that side of the ball going either. And I think, yeah, the rest of this division, the tide turning, you know, a young Bengals team that looks like they got a lot of pieces that are going to be there for years to come. So, yeah, it was so weird to watch. And again, this was the Bengals team that we talked about a few weeks ago that I thought could make some noise in the playoffs. So we'll see if they can keep it going and be consistent at all.
No, the Bengals, man, they're suddenly, and I was shocked when I read this just off the box score. Yeah, they are 7-4. I fell asleep and woke up, and the Bengals are somehow right there at the top of this division. So I want to go out west with you, Alex, because the Niners and the Vikings and that game, and I know the top line facts of the matter here are that the Niners won this game and that Kirk Cousins struggled, but I want to ask you about Deebo Samuel, because the way the Niners have been using him, like, he's one of those guys who defies position and description, right? I mean, this is a wide receiver who is being used how, basically?
Yeah, I mean, he's phenomenal. He's hard to find, you know, adjectives that do him justice.
Second down and 5. It's Deebo Samuel. He's inside the 30 and still going.
This young man is going to get paid, Kenny. Like, he is outstanding. He is awesome. I don't know what you call that.
And I think we had seen glimpses of it, you know, since he's been in the league. But the question had always kind of been, is he just a gadget guy? Is he a guy you just hand, you know, an end around to or a reverse? Or can he really play receiver? And man, he has answered that question and more. And I think the question is, he can do both. You know, he had 5 rushes today for 72 yards and 2 touchdowns. He set an NFL record. He has the most rushing touchdowns by a receiver, I think, since the merger. These were both teams 5-5 going in today. They both were wild card teams, I thought, that, you know, at the start of the season had playoff aspirations. And at this point, we're trending in the right direction. So it had a bit of a playoff feel and energy to it. Because either team that won this, I feel like, put themselves in the thick of the playoff race. And man, it was awesome to watch. The Niners, I think, have really found themselves. Kyle Shanahan, these last few weeks, has really proven himself, I think, to maybe be the best run game coordinator in football.
Yeah.
They had, I think, a season high in rushing today. Elijah Mitchell, their rookie, deserves a shout out.
That's the other dude, man. Like, the actual running back, right?
He's played amazing. And we're seeing this, like, it's a little bit of the formula they had a couple years ago when they went to the Super Bowl. Like, they're running the ball. Jimmy's playing really well off of it, play action. He's good in third and manageable. He's good in red zone. And then this defense, too, they created a couple takeaways today. Like, they're playing fast. They're getting to the football. You know, I think same thing. If they don't have a couple special teams, you know, blunders, they gave up a kick return for a touchdown and then missed a field goal late. Like, it wouldn't have been as close, but fun to watch. I think they're both really good football teams, and happy to see the Niners get a W, man, because I do think this puts them right back in it. They're a tough team right now.
Yeah, they've won 3 in a row. They're 6-5. They're breathing down the necks of the terrified, searching Los Angeles Rams. And so I want to actually ask you about a different game, although I'm following the thread of your Niners experience here, because I want to go out to Ann Arbor, Alex. I want to go out to what happened with Jim Harbaugh, your former coach, who easily had the biggest win of his college coaching career by blowing out Ohio State.
Michigan defeats Ohio State 42-27. Finally.
Having played for the guy, what went through your mind watching that?
Yeah, this was, I thought on Saturday was an all-time game.
It was incredible,
All you're hearing leading up to this is, I mean, Jim Harbaugh hasn't beat Ohio State yet. They've just been pounding Michigan. These kids, some of them sixth-year seniors because of COVID, have never beat Ohio State. I mean, that is crazy to say. They've kind of been the little brother to Ohio State and the success that they've had, obviously, in the last 10 years. And, you know, Jim went there. He bleeds blue. And to see them in the snow, the big house was absolutely rocking.
It would be a commercial for the idea of college football, Alex. I watched that and I'm like, oh, yeah, right. No, I get it. I get why this sport is special.
Yes, exactly. I couldn't agree more. And then for Michigan to hold on, and just to do it the way they did, it was tough football, both these teams back and forth. But Michigan, I thought was amazing. I watched a special on them too, all offseason. You know, they have stuff everywhere around their facility, and it all says, what have you done today to beat Ohio State? It's like these kids have been staring at that for years, right? And haven't lived up to it. And for those kids to go out there and get that W, for Jim to finally, you know, answer that bell, good for him. I mean, he lives for the game. And to see them pull out the win, I thought was absolutely amazing. We'll see if they can finish it off this next week in the Big Ten
That's
Championship.
Right.
I would love to see it. You know, Jim's an all-timer. He's obviously got his quirks, but man, he loves ball. And like I said, you know, I know how much this meant to him and all those kids. So good for them.
This was an 8-game losing streak snapped by Jim Harbaugh finally. But I'm curious what it's like for those guys and for you actually to have played for the guy whose quirks you just alluded to. Is there a moment or a story that sticks out that sort of encapsulates that particularly quirky mix of intensity and also insanity?
Oh, man, there's lots of stories. about Jim. I think the thing I appreciate most about Jim is you got good luck coaches, right? You got a lot of coaches that kind of like wish you good luck on game day. Like you're going out there and it's sometimes as a player, you're like, wait, aren't you going to be with us? Like, you know, like, aren't we in this together? And Jim is not a good luck coach. Jim is like, he's going out there with you. He is in it with you. He just has such a great perspective. I think, you know, he lives for these challenges, right? Like, I mean, even this, that they hadn't beat him in 8 years, all of that against them, but he is going to take it head on. Like, he is not afraid of a challenge. Like, he lives for it, in fact. And I think to have a head coach that takes that on like that, I think you kind of embody that as a football team.
Yeah, you know, Alex, I don't know if this name means anything to you, but if I say it to you, I'm just curious if it rings a bell. Freddie P. Soft.
Oh, yeah. The Freddie P. Soft is a great story.
explain Freddie P. Soft for people who are not lucky enough to be familiar with Frederick P. Soft.
So we're having like a meeting one day, a team meeting, and obviously Jim's up there talking to the team. And I think it was kind of late in the year, it's kind of dog days, people, battle of attrition, everybody's banged up. And he gives this whole thing. He introduces us to Freddie P. Soft. And Freddie P. Soft is essentially... You know, if you can picture, you're really sore. You know, it's the middle of the season. You don't want to go out for practice on Wednesday. You got a lot of complaints. You got all these issues. Well, all of that comes from the voice in your head, who for Harbaugh, as he illustrates, is a little guy that sits on your shoulder, and his name is Freddie P. Soft, and he whispers in your ear all these complaints, like, you know what, you should just take a day off, or like, you're really sore, like that your knee or whatever it is. Like, he has all these excuses for you, and Freddie P. Soft is the guy that whispers these into your ear, and you can essentially choose to listen to him or not. And he obviously is telling the entire team as a challenge of whether or not we're going to listen to all of our own Freddie P. Softs that we have in our head. Now, it is. That's a great example of a Jim Harbaugh-ism.
I just love that Jim Harbaugh created like what is reportedly a 4-inch tall little man that he has named and branded just to personify everything he hates about softness in American life.
The best is when he tells it, you know that he has done this his entire life. Like, he didn't just come up with this to tell the team that, like, no, he's lived this, that he named this guy probably when he was like 7 years old.
That's
and
right.
He's been battling his own Freddie P. Soft since then, and he decided to tell the whole team about it. So that he is authentic. I will tell you that.
Alex Smith, thank you for sharing how I need to motivate you and coach you up before our next podcast.
Pablo, I appreciate it, man. Fun as always.
I'm Pablo Torre, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.